Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Fireside Room, Diane Shelton will be speaking on the church's inclusion of people with special challenges. So let's listen in on Diane Shelton.
I'm from Mankato, Minnesota. My job is my full-time job is that I'm a special education teacher for the school district in Mankato, Minnesota. I also have a part-time job, three-quarter time job, working at the university, teaching in the special ed department, and also in the curriculum and instruction department. This area of special needs is near and dear to me for lots of different reasons. I'd like to start out by just telling a little story. There's a boy that I have gotten to know, a little boy that I've worked with, and his name is Bob. And Bob, when I first knew that I was going to get Bob in my classroom, I was I was worried. I was fearful. Because Bob couldn't walk. Bob couldn't use his hands. Bob had a heart condition and a physical condition. Or he had a seizure. Actually, the major issue was a seizure disorder. Cerebral palsy, seizure disorder, and the parents had decided that if he did in fact go into a life-threatening seizure, that they did not want him resuscitated. No words, no movement, no bowel or bladder control. And this little boy is 5 years old. And my thought was, how am I ever going to work with him? How am I ever going to write an educational plan for him? What if he dies? What if he has this seizure? Really, what good will this environment do him? Is he even aware? So I went to the spring meeting where I heard about him, and hi, come on in.
What's this one on?
This is special needs, special challenges. The other one's anger.
What?
So I went to the meeting in the spring to find out about Bob, and I heard all these things, and through the summer I just thought, what can I teach him? What is the good going to be? I think it's wonderful for other children to be around children with special challenges. I absolutely believe that. But how are they going to interact? What's going to happen? So the school year started, and I have to honestly say that I avoided Bob. I let my teaching assistant do the interacting. That was safer. But then something sort of interesting started happening. I started slowly by touching him, saying good morning, even though there wasn't a response of any kind. Talking to him. And one day, and I don't know where the idea came from, I put my fingers in his hands and I said, Bob, if you can hear me, I want you to squeeze my fingers. And he squeezed my fingers really hard. And until that point, no one had a clue. They knew he could hear, but they didn't know he could understand.
She's talking about a five-year-old boy.
Yeah, five-year-old little boy who could not talk, could not walk, could hear, had cerebral palsy, and almost a constant seizuring disorder. So he was seizuring almost constantly. Well, I got excited. My first response, however, was to weep. I just wept. And I called his mother and we wept together. Because how much had he understood? How much he had experienced? And there was no communication. So we sat down and we said, what are the priorities for Bob? Well, you know what our first priority was. We've got to work on this communication piece. And we also need to have one case manager, and that's another piece. Well, you know, communication opens up everything. So all of a sudden, we had a way that the children could start communicating with Bob. And we had ways of asking him what he wanted to do, what he wanted to play with. And we got all of the people that worked with him in his home, because as you can imagine, with such complicated disabilities, we had, you know, they needed lots of people to help them out. And we got them all together, and we said, this is what we're doing. This is how we're going to communicate with Bob. By the end of the year, Bob had lots of friends. Children were wanting to be by him. We started seeing some smiles. And we knew that we needed to talk to him about how he felt, to give him words, and to start the never-ending exploration of how do we help Bob communicate and let us know what he knows. It's, you know, on one hand, I think that we were all absolutely overjoyed that he is understanding. On the other hand, of course, it was devastating. The reason I tell you the story is because I think that each individual that walks across the threshold of our churches is like Bob, that has a special need. We don't know what they know. We don't know a lot about them. We don't know what they need until we focus and start asking some questions. But before that, we have to not be afraid to do that. One of the things that I'd like to bring up, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later in the forum too, is that the education system in this country, spurned on by parents, said, we want our children included in all of educational activities. It's called mainstreaming, and there's a law. It wasn't because schools were really nice and inclusive on their own and said, come on, you know, we want all of you children deserve the right to an education in the least restrictive environment. No. We didn't do that at all. But parents said, we want our children to have an education with everyone. And we want our children to be treated just like everyone else, right? So the parents got busy and really banded together and are really the ones, and you're probably familiar with this law, Public Law 94-142. How many times have you heard it? Did you help write it? Maybe you wrote some letters at that time?
A lot of work with legislature, ARC, mm-hmm. All kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, you...
Hard road.
And a road that's still being gone, you know, we're still going down that road over and over and over again.
We have to constantly be aware because they constantly want to take funding away. And when you take funding away, that ends program.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So anyway, we've got this law, and we've got another law that's kind of a follow-up law, too. But anyway, that law says that every child born in this country from birth to age 21 has a right to a free, appropriate education in the least restrictive environment. Now, do our churches have the same law? You're shaking your head back there. Do our people with special challenges have the right to worship in the church of their choice, least restrictive environment,
right, but it isn't practiced?
That's my point. And I don't know if we even say they have the right. I don't even know if we go that way. Tell me what your experience has been. Some of your experiences have been.
Well, of course, I belong to the same church since before he was born. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes a different situation. Mm-hmm. So he has always been included because he was part of the family, he was part of the church, as seen before. But as you... It's better than it was 20 years ago. We can travel and we can go to different churches and not get the feeling that we did 20 years ago.
Although what I still see happening, I guess, we're going to talk tonight about cultural wars. And you're going to hear me keep talking about a part of those wars are accepting people who are different than we are. And this continuum, I have this arrow up here with two ends. And I think that people with special challenges fall all along that continuum. From extraordinarily bright people who don't have social skills or that we need to minister to. But along the whole line, to people who are like Bobby that I described. What I see happening, and I'd like you to talk to me about what you see in your congregations, is that we're pretty good right here. But boy, when it gets out here, that's as touchy and as hard to include as, for instance, people that we're not used to, like people from other cultures, people who are gay or lesbian, that kind of thing. Would you agree with that statement? Mm-hmm. Anything out of that kind of norm, mm-hmm, middle section?
People aren't comfortable.
We're not comfortable. Because we don't understand and we're afraid. In my church, it's really interesting. I know that there have been some people that have attempted to join, and they have children with special needs. But we don't have a clue how to include those children at the Sunday school level. And so what has happened in our town is that there's a separate Sunday school for children with special needs. It's kind of a, we'll just lump all these people together. I mean, talk about exclusionary. We have not done that in the public schools for years.
How big is Mankato?
50, 60,000 people. Now, we still, I mean, if we say the middle, there might be some people with mild handicapping conditions that, oh yeah. Or in a circumstance like you're talking about, there's a family that has a child and they've just kind of brought that child along and they've been really actively involved. But if someone walks across the threshold that maybe doesn't have the skills and the background and the support that you've had in this family, they get excluded. Because we have to come up with a plan, right? I mean, the reality is if we come, anyone with a special challenge that crosses the threshold, we've got to somehow come up with a plan with that, for that individual. Whether it's someone who needs earphones, someone who might be hearing impaired, or large print books for someone with a visual impairment. Well, the same kind of thing has to happen with, the areas of special need. What are your experiences? I'd like to hear a little bit about your church experiences.
A curious thing happened recently at St. Paul's. We've been talking, we have a church basement like churches built in the 50s do. And that's our social room, and we have we've been talking, the ADA has kind of said that, well, we need an elevator, okay, mm-hmm, we need some. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that has been, the trustees have been kind of saying, well, we could do this, we can do that, where can we put it, and how can we do it, and how can we pay for it. Anyway, then, but just within the last couple months, and I don't know whether this is fact or not, but anyway, well, I heard from one of the trustees that somehow the ADA had kind of backed off of their things toward nonprofits or churches or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so, consequently, we were out of
it. It's not on the list.
It just cut off the list of the trustees'
priorities.
No, just like
there are people that could use it. Yeah.
So you have a population in your church that could use the elevator.
Yeah, that's right. They can't. They're excluded from at least from social activities or the coffee hour or ladies' aid or whatever.
Hey, and what's huge at church? Mm-hmm. Social. What's it about?
Yeah, right.
Community.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
So
very interesting, but not uncommon.
So Dick wrote a story in the Reporter, our church newsletter, which he just recently took over the editorship, and he wrote about this 95-year-old woman who said that she had always gone to Ladies' Aid until about 5 years ago she broke her hip, and now she can't get down the stairs. So he put that line in to kind of awaken some people that maybe that is a need.
An interesting thought that I have about something interesting I think about what you're talking about is we don't know when we're going to need, when we're going to have special challenges and special needs. Do any of us in this room? Could happen like that. 10 minutes. Fall on a hike. It is. I mean, that is the reality that we live with, and yet we have to, in the area of special adaptions and special needs in our churches, it's not going to be a priority. I'm maintaining, the thought I have is that it's another way, when we don't build elevators, to exclude the people that we're afraid of. It's another category that's frightening because we don't know what they're about. So when we have someone come to our door, the door of our church, that's different than we've experienced, we go into a state, as we were talking about today, a state of disequilibrium. Well, I'm going to do everything in my power to maintain the status quo, which is what I'm comfortable with, and that means if I don't have to do it, if I'm not forced to do it, exactly. And we're not going to miss you. We're not going to miss that 95-year-old lady, are we?
Well, she can still go to church. She just can't go. I mean, that would be...
that would be the mentality.
Yeah, right.
But what that is exclusion, isn't
it?
So what do I do?
I'm so glad because that leads into... Go ahead.
My feeling is that, in reality, a mother or a child like that would not suddenly do that.
But it could suddenly be they move into your church, yeah, and you're the Sunday school teacher.
I would think that mother or the parents would approach the Sunday school on another day other than Sunday morning,
mm-hmm,
and say, this is my child, he needs special attention, can the church, what can we do,
mm-hmm,
so that, in a mechanical sense, it's not going to happen suddenly on a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling would be that 9 out of 10 parents would be sensitive enough, mm-hmm, to that, because goodness knows by that time they've already gone through it 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a sensitive church would would go through the procedure of trying to set up a group, a committee, an assistant Sunday school teacher, whatever. And I think at that point, the parents can really be a great deal of assistance in teaching the rest of us how to deal with it.
Right, but I think his question is a really, really good one. Because it's like, okay, you've just come up with some really specific things that we're going to talk about, and that's the piece that I wanted to move into is, you know, what do we do when people with special challenges approach our churches? Do you have something to say?
Well, even though Mark, was born and raised in our church, when it came time for Christian education, we were presented with that problem. And it happened that there was a retired lady who had been a special education teacher. So she said, I'll teach more. So she had, Sunday school for him. But he was separate. He wasn't included with the normal children. And it wasn't until he became involved in school situation down in Iowa, Rock Valley, Iowa, with Reformed church people, that he really got Christian education. And the place to go for Christian education is with the Reformed churches. They have wonderful materials and for all ages, from the young through, and they do so much more than we as Lutherans do. Missouri Synod has put out some materials for special education, but I tried to work with some of it one year. It's okay, but it was a hard series to work with. I mean, it involved a lot of preparation on the teacher's part.
See, and what I maintain is that every child, every adult in our church environment should be allowed to be with their same age peers. So when Mark is 5, Mark's with the 5-year-olds. When Mark is 6, he's with the 6-year-olds. So that's one of the important pieces to keep in mind. That as we include children and adults, one of the things that happened in our church was that as this child whose family was very involved grew older, we kept trying to keep her with the younger children because people were saying, well, her mental age is, or her behavior is. And so she's growing taller and taller and taller, and she's with this younger group of children. So, one really important thing is to keep all children, all adults, with their same age peers.
One of the things that I've noticed in my experience is congregations will decide they want to do something and then decide what's the best thing for them. Without ever finding, asking for input.
We all do that.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to just kind of move into now, what do we do? Well, one of the things that I've been talking about in my sessions and communications is naming. We need to name a couple of things. I think it's really legitimate to say, if you're the Sunday school teacher, if you're the pastor, if you're the head of the social committee or the young adult group, whatever, and you're approached by a family member or an individual with special challenges, I think it's really okay to say, to name your experience. My experience is I don't have much experience. So we name where we come from. And quite frankly, I guess I'm a little fearful. Or I'm a little unsure that I can meet Bobby's needs. Help me out. Okay? So the first thing we can do is name our reality. Because what happens when we name it is that we then don't avoid. this is where I'm at. Then, the first thing to do is find out, what does this individual need? What are their needs? And that means, well, we'll do that in a second. But what do they need? And it's like, do they need physical assistance? If it's an older person in your congregation, do they need transportation? Do they need someone to sit with them or to help them get from point A to point B? So there'd either be the physical piece. What do they need physically? Also, emotionally. One of the things about people with special challenges is that they're not all obvious, are they? Sometimes we're dealing with situations of people with mental illness. They're kind of, really, my experience is, that's the scariest above anything else. And maybe what we need in our church is for someone to come. Maybe this person's in a group home situation or a semi-independent living situation, whatever. Maybe what we need is someone to come and talk to us as a whole congregation about this person's needs. You know what? We in special ed are very happy to do that. We're happy to come and say, this person has a condition called paranoid schizophrenia. They're on medication. These are the things that are helpful in conversations with this person. If they start talking about things that aren't real, just bring them back to a focus point. Okay. So people are very happy who work with children or adults with special challenges to come and give you information. So you might need strategies. Can I spell it?
We can't read that.
Oh, you can't read it.
Light.
These are terrible. They're all, none of them work.
Why?
Probably the person on anger out there took them.
Why don't you run down to the drugstore and get some more?
Yeah. Okay, strategies. We might need to learn strategies. So we need to learn the physical, you know, what do they need physically? What kind of strategies might they need? What are some other things that, equipment? Sometimes people need equipment. How do we go about getting that?
Access.
Oh, biggie. Very important. I mean, what thing is more obvious? Right? Oh, come on in. We accept all people. You can't get in our church.
You can't get your wheelchair in the door. You can't get the drinking fountain. You can't get to the toilet.
Can't get down to the social hour, which is everything. Not quite, but...
There's a young man in our who is a member of our congregation that is in a wheelchair now. And he can get in, but he doesn't want to be on display. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what would probably be a good idea, but nobody's acted on yet, is to cut off a couple of, like, maybe at the front and at the back or in the middle, something where he could just sit in so he's not in the aisle.
And you know what? You've got the skilled people in your congregation that could do that in one afternoon, right?
Yeah. We had one wheelchair, well, now we have several coming to church, but one lady who found herself in a wheelchair was a long beloved member of our church whose physical condition just gradually deteriorated, and she's now in her late 70s or so, early 80s maybe. And everybody loves Rachel. She's the most beautiful person in the world, but we saw this from needing the, you know, being perfectly capable. She told me not too long ago, she said, you know, I've climbed every mountain in our valley. You know, but she had been there for a long time. And gradually, as she needed a wheelchair, the love and the assistance was already built in. And Rachel, for the first, I detected, for the first month or so that she was in that wheelchair, she was self-conscious. She did not want to be in that wheelchair. She missed church occasionally, but the love and the outreach, that was easy. I mean, that's the easy part, because she was such a beautiful person. To reach out and include her, and everybody goes up and gives her a big hug when she comes to the door, and it's just one of those things that's very, very easy. But she went through that. The self-consciousness of suddenly not being able to walk through that door and having to be needled in by her husband, Bob. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what would happen if she had been a newcomer. Mm-hmm.
That's the issue. And you hit one is accessibility. Mm-hmm. And you know what I, you know, the thing that I'm going to go back to here for a second is the fact that we've had a law that's changed that reality in our school system, but we don't have any laws that have changed that within our churches. We don't have a law that says, I mean, I think it's kind of, they're skirting around.
This is hearsay, I have about that trustee's report to me that the elevators, you know, they backed off. I don't have any firsthand. Really, this would just, you know, came.
Well, what my understanding is that if you build a new building, mm-hmm. it has to be handicap accessible. Mm-hmm. If you do major revamping of your building, it has to be handicap accessible. But there's nothing on the book, to my knowledge at this point, that says you have to do that. But that's, again, the obvious. There are many, many hidden conditions. Some of them are short-term. Someone who, for instance, my father died of cancer, and the last year of his life, it was very, very difficult for him to walk from his car up the steps of the church. It was impossible. So, you can have long-term disabilities from birth, or from birth, or it can be short. Think of if you've broken an ankle or a leg or something like that. That's included in this too.
How do you take communion? I
mean, exactly.
They do go to the front, and people, you know, they don't have to go
to
the steps.
Yeah, he comes.
Our pastor goes down. The wheelchairs are back. Our pastor just walks down, and the ministers communion back there.
So, you know, you brought up a good point too. What did Rachel need? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a question that we have to become comfortable in asking. What do you need to be a part of this congregation? And by asking that question, we're including them. We're saying we will change our behavior to include you. For instance, when Mark was going to the Sunday school, or, you know, in that time, if somebody would have come to you and said, you know, what can we do to help him be with his peers? And people then start brainstorming. So the first question and this is what you can take back with you, okay, and present as a generic approach to how can we do inclusion in our church? First of all, I think you need to make a statement of inclusion. I think it's like any other bias that we experience, racism, sexism, whatever. If, in fact, your belief is that people with special needs should be included in your church, you need to make that statement. It can't be an assumption. And you need to make it loud and clear. And ways that you can make that loud and clear to begin with is to include people with special challenges in your prayers that you say weekly. Maybe have some forums and open it up. Maybe have some meeting space for particular handicapping conditions in your church that could start happening during the week or whatever. So you make a statement saying, come on, we want you. Then, when people come, there's of course the information gathering period. And that's what you would need to know as a Sunday school teacher or a pastor. Tell me about your child's special needs. Really, that's the only thing you have to remember. tell me about your child's special needs.
I can know you care.
Exactly.
You want to.
And when you say, tell me about it, parents will start telling you, right? When you put that out there. It's amazing what tell me about brings us, just that phrase. Okay, then, once you've met with the parent, and the child, sometimes the child or the person with the handicapping condition can be in on what do you need. So that's over here, need. And then the next part is brainstorming. And this is fun. And this part should include many people from your congregation. Okay, say that we have a person with special needs. Let's take someone from your church in particular. And let's say your 95-year-old friend. And what does she need? Let's just talk about what does she need. She needs accessibility, right? For the whole church. What else do you think she needs?
She needs it so that she's not on display. I mean, that she's being singled out for this. So it would probably be, not brought up just for her, but for anyone who can't get them.
Okay, so she needs to be, it needs to be an inclusive kind of thing. I think that's very sensitive, that we're just not going to say, okay, we're going to do this for you. No, because the idea is to create an environment that's inclusive for all people. Okay, so she needs access, privacy, inclusion, respect. What else? Is she able to move around on her own?
Sure,
once
yeah,
she's
yeah.
In that
she,
environment?
Yeah, right. She gets a lot. She gets around at home. Maybe with a walker.
Okay. So what you could say, you could bring up to your church. I would like to, at a council meeting or whatever, I would like to see our church more friendly, more accessible for people with physical challenges. So you start out with the physical challenge piece. And some of the needs that I've noticed are that people need to be able to access all levels of the church. And they need to do that with respect. Now, how can we do that? And that's the part that gets to be fun. Because the people of the church then can do their brainstorming. And that's a piece where you're including the people in your church in the solution. So there's some investment. The other thing over here might be an individual might need adaptions to attend Sunday school. We want to make our Sunday school classes accessible to children with mental challenges, for instance. So we say, what do they need? They need a revised curriculum, maybe. They might need an assistant. So we go down and we talk about what they need. Then the next part is, how can we do that? So given this one, let's just do some brainstorming right here. How can we help our 95-year-old friend? How can we achieve that? Okay, an elevator.
Any ramp.
I don't know if there's room for a ramp.
Anyway, that's
well, just brainstorm any ideas in terms of accessibility.
Or one of those chairs. Like they put in the grade school a lift.
An automatic door.
Automatic door. Okay, so you get the idea. You sit down and you brainstorm some ideas. Then, I mean, you've got lots of ideas. Can you do all of them right now? Probably not. So, what you're going to do is choose from the brainstorm. this is what we can do. We are committed to doing, we will try and do. So, after the brainstorming, you come up with a plan for action. And this is where, you know how it happens at church meetings? Mm-hmm. You say, well, I know somebody that can do this, and I know somebody that can do that, and I'll talk to this committee about that, and let's get together and try it.
Except a lot of that stuff is not cheap.
And right.
We have budgetary restraints.
That's, I think, the main problem. It's not that they don't like it, you know. But
sure it is, but then how do we decide? Then we get into other kinds of discussions, don't we, about what do we value? Mm-hmm. What are we about as a church? Last week, when Gomez was here, were you here when he was here? And he asked us, what are we about? Mm-hmm. What do the lawns look like at your church? So then we start saying, who do we value and what do we value?
Well, that's a budget problem with any church. Light bulbs always come first, and then the benevolence somewhere down the line. And then we have to reverse that, and it's a problem in every church I've been in. And if we would learn to put benevolence first, you're going to give to benevolence, put that at the top. Everything else happens. Automatically, it happens. That's the Lord's work.
It's also interesting because you are investing in your congregation, mm-hmm. in your building. I'm a member of a very old congregation, and all anybody can say is, we've got to get new members to pay these bills.
You've
got to do something to attract new members. It's self-defeating.
Exactly. And so if we say, I value you, this is important. Well, and the thing that I think about this piece, and I know we're hitting the physical accessibility pretty hard, but it's probably going to be all of us at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're all going to meet. So do we look ahead and plan, or do we get excluded at some point because it's not accessible?
Our church is right now going through, do we pave our parking lot or not? We have a dirt parking lot. And it's a controversial item, mainly because we have a water supply problem. And it bothers some people because when we get rain, which is very seldom, we want to see that rain go into the ground. On the other hand, we have a lot of people who are getting older and older and older, and they're stumbling all over the rocks and the dirt in the parking lot. And it's a, you know.
They're falling.
What are we going to, no, they're not falling, but it's uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And so with a paved parking lot, but there are people who are taking care of that, who are making sure that they mark on their envelope that a certain amount of money is going to that parking lot. And that fund is rising. And it's happening. And it's going to happen. We're going to have a paved parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those things that's just going to happen.
We're going through this with accessibility right now because our church was built in 1934.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so it has steps.
Yeah.
And there's steps to go into the basement. And so we are now just getting underway. We're going to go for an addition. But it's going to cost like $450,000.
Oh, it's not cheap.
And so some people are saying, are we have, I actually heard this remark. Are we going to spend $450,000 so that three or four people can?
Oh.
I knew that was going to be the comment. And
it's
a great comment.
It's not just an elevator, but that's the main thing that's pushing. And
yeah.
We will have a parish hall, you know, all of this, $450,000. But actually, we're not getting much more. We'll have a new entrance into the church, and we'll have this parish hall, and we'll have the elevator. That's about what we're getting for $450,000.
Well, and then my question back to them would be, and what should we do when you're in a car accident and paralyzed?
Yeah. Well, I think we
have just gotten.
So where will you go to church?
And where will you go to church? Linda, are you willing to tell someone who's been a member of this congregation how come we have to find somewhere else to go?
Which is, I think, something that happens a lot.
Yep, it is.
And it's like you said.
That's happened to two of our members. They're going down the street to the Reformed Church simply because they can't get in our church.
Wow.
There's a lot of what we're talking about is exactly what happens with other populations. This population is no different because, again, they're not in that nice little middle piece that most of us are fortunate enough to be in. And so when we're not in that middle, what do? We leave, we don't come, we come once or twice. And you know what? Part of it is not even just the obvious piece of not being able to come in, not being able to physically get in. It's the subtle. No one's sitting by them. I mean, how many of you are comfortable talking with someone who has cerebral palsy? One person. I think it's very difficult to approach someone who has cerebral palsy that we're not used to, don't know, and that person who takes a long time to get those words out. Now, usually what happens is if that person is sitting there, we're going to choose to sit by our friend who's far easier to talk. Okay? If I'm the person with cerebral palsy of average intelligence, sometimes bright, that's usually the typical scenario there, do you think I'm going to hang around more than a couple weeks? So there's that subtle, awful exclusion that happens in the coffee, and during the coffee.
And then you don't see them very often. I mean, pretty soon that takes care of itself because they're not there anymore, so you forget about them, yeah.
Exactly.
One little comment here, I'll cut you quick.
No, that's okay.
We entertained at Convalescent Hospital, and I walked in one day with all our dogs and all our paraphernalia and everything, and it was a young man catatonic. I mean, he just could not move.
Oof.
His eyes did not rotate. He did nothing. But we have a habit of blowing up the biggest balloons we can find and batting around while we're doing dog tricks or whatever. And I directed the balloon to him. And he woke up. The nurse was all like, oh! And since then, that's his therapy. He moved again. He wasn't real good, but he moved again, and he lit up his face smile. I just go, oh, great. And so every time we went in, I don't see him. But every time we go again, this first time we go.
You have dogs that do tricks?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a neat therapy. Yeah, that's a fabulous therapy.
Fabulous. Called the doctor, the other well, we don't get one of them. We are it.
Dogs and cats and lots of different animals.
Yeah, we have cats sometimes too.
You bring to church?
Oh, yeah. You do go. One,
I'm told. Well, not a church, it's
firecrackers. Oh, I came to church down in the nursery sometimes when I have two little bunnies, but I was at firecrackers one day, and the last thing we did was stand up and do the Lord's Prayer. I was standing next to this lady that I'm not sure she should still be singing. She's elderly, but she's a doll. And at the end of the whole thing, I heard, oh, and I thought it was her all. It was my dog. No, my dog sang.
So,
yes. We train and give it to the originals.
Oh, that's wonderful. And maybe that's a way, bringing in the dogs and the cats and the animals, that will help with the inclusion too, because it's an icebreaker and comfort, raises the comfort level.
But don't you think that would distract the sermon?
Oh, we're not talking about truth.
No.
Oh, okay.
But those subtle kinds of things, I guess that's one of the things I wanted to accomplish in just this discussion group, is that there are so many subtle things and subtle ways that we exclude people. And so, and I think it's again out of fear. It's fearful for us to approach a person that's different, that behaves differently, that looks differently. I worked with a little girl one time who had Apert syndrome. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Apert syndrome, but the face is very dysmorphic. And they have to do many, many, many surgeries for her face to even look somewhat normal. And I watched people just take one look at her and head in the other direction. And what I saw on her face was fear. And so, again, what I'm saying is, we've got to put out, first of all, the welcoming light. And we might even say, we've been fearful of people who are different in the past. We'd like you to come. We'd like people with special challenges and special needs to come to our church. We want you here. We want to be inclusive. And then when they come, tell us what you need. Now, what I'm going to say about the brainstorming piece is that the beautiful part about that is you only have to do as a congregation what you can do. So if you don't have $500,000, maybe what you're going to figure out is a way to respectfully help this woman get from the top floor to the bottom floor. And it might be putting her in a chair and some people volunteering each week to simply carry her downstairs.
We used to do that in our church before mm-hmm. that building there. Mm-hmm. And you're really willing to do it.
Sure.
There, we had a church directory photos done last spring, and there was a woman in the nursing home, that was the way they dropped her down.
Mm-hmm. See, you know, we're so smart, aren't we? We have got so many creative abilities and skills that we can brainstorm ways to include. Now, the harder ones are the more subtle. What does the person with cerebral palsy need to be socially included in our congregation? One of the brainstorm things that I'm going to put right up there, first of all, is education. We need to be educated. What does this mean? What does this person understand? What can, you know, lots of questions that people are going to have. We can't be afraid of the questions.
Okay. I was going to say that one of the most important things, I think, is to find a place in the church where these people can do something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They can usher, or they can fold papers, or no matter how
difficult it is.
But if they can feel needed, is one of the most inclusive things that you can do for them.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. If what my statement earlier, and I'm glad you went in more depth there, that we all have the right to be doing what our peers are doing. If our peers are ushering, we have a right to be doing that, if we're able at all. If our peers are making bread for a bake sale, we make bread. So we come up with the brainstorming part, and that's the creative part. And that's where then we all can get involved with how the inclusion can happen. And the next step is to make a plan for action. Then you brainstorm, you come up with the idea, and you put it into action. The next part is then reviewing that. How's it been going? Is it working? Are there some things we need to take a look at? It'd be the evaluation process. And I'd say that you do that fairly soon. Because what happens oftentimes is we might start out with this, but the person may leave if we don't continue to evaluate, or the people, the group of people. So that evaluation process, checking in with them. How's it going? Is this working? Is this plan working? Are you feeling a part of the congregation?
Is there something more we can do?
Is there more we can do? Tell me what, is there something else you need? Because, you know, part of the importance of this is I don't think that there's anything more painful than to be isolated in a group of people. Do you think?
Mm-mm.
I think it's one of the most painful things on the face of the earth. And I don't know where it's more obvious than in a church basement. Or where it's more lonely than in a church basement. because we go there with the expectation of inclusion. We go to church thinking, this is the place that I'm going to be included. God welcomes me. All of those thoughts that we were brought up with. And right now we sit here whole and healthy and all those kinds of things. But the possibility always exists. So any other thoughts or comments? There's no magic. There's just no magic. But it's hard work. It's far easier to let them silently go on.
Yeah, last year, I'd never heard of Fulham because I'm only an 11-year-old, almost loser, I guess, since I married my husband. I had a chance to read in the voice, Holden Miller, if you're interested, put that on. I said, wow, oh, I know. I set down the computer, but about a few weeks later, I'm, almost accepted. He didn't want to go. He had too many commitments. He's church council president, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, good.
He's there, yeah. And so I took my slow friend, who runs home, and I'll tell you, she's 52 now. She's 51 years old. I was 58 at the time. She had never, ever in her life been treated.
What a ministry that was. This whole village ministered to.
Oh, I mean, when we had the staff meeting and we said a little bit about what she sat next to me, very reticent to talk, a little bit shy, but not generally not shy. She would stand up now and say something if she could. But I cried with emotion, thanking the people for showing me that Christian love that had never been a part of her life.
We could see as an outsider, we could see the transition on Emma's part from the time you arrived to the time we left. Mm-hmm. Which was, I think, we overlapped most of our 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And Emma was totally different at the end of that 3 weeks because of the ministry of Holy Village. Mm-hmm. Everybody went out of their way to say hello to Emma and include her. And
almost
everybody. Hey, you've got to take 90% of the credit.
Well, almost everybody. Almost everybody. There were a few. There were three.
Okay. Fearful. And could you not see the fear?
Oh, yes.
Sure, you can see the fear. And but listen to what your testimonial about what her life had been before Holden is what, this is something I want to leave you with too, is that between 3 and 10% of the population has special needs. Unless your church has a population of between 3 and 10% of the people with special needs, you're not doing your job. We're not doing, and I'm not saying you, we are not doing our job. Somehow, they're getting the message, we are not welcome.
I don't know whether it's fair or not, but whenever I push somebody in a wheelchair, and you just, wherever you are, why, the people you meet, you know, avert their eyes from the person, you know, and it just,
it's right there, isn't it?
And I've been there, I've been with someone, and he's been on a mission to buy something or another. And we go in the place, and obviously the equipment we're looking for is for him. But still, the salesman talks to me.
Oh, yes, yes. Do you know that Emma has a credit card and I don't? And Emma doesn't read or write. So, you know, there's something to say.
Well, and there's another piece of that, too, the vulnerability.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Love people with special needs.
Who takes care of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is kind of, I shouldn't, but how many of us haven't seen the time when a bum wandered in the church and nobody knew what to do with him?
Yeah.
He has special needs.
You bet. I'm so,
I don't know what to do.
I'm glad you brought that up, because when I talk about special needs here, we've been kind of focusing on the physical. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I bet if we went around this room, we have special needs in this room that we can't see. And some of them are so very obvious. But I think you do the same thing. If you go back to the very simple approach, what do you need? Brainstorming, what can we do for the needs? And what's the plan for action?
Before that, you all take a good look at Matthew 25:35. and review it constantly.
Can you say that for us?
Well, that's the judgment, but the part of it which says, I was hungry and you fed me, I was naked and you clothed me, and when, Lord, did we see this? It was, inasmuch as you've done it for the least of these, my brothers and sisters will come to me. And if you don't put that first and foremost, a lot of this isn't going to be accomplished.
You know, and I agree with you 100%, because what I think happens every time an individual with special challenges walks into our midst, into our churches, wherever we are, it throws us into a state of, I don't know what to do this with this, but into a state of disequilibrium. And our first impulse is to avoid, to run, to hide, to make it go away. And so what I think Jesus does for us is say, wait a minute, that's the rule you'd like to live by. That's how I know you, but this is what I command you to do. And so that we work toward.
Do we all know who's coming in on Sunday, especially?
No.
The harder you're next week.
And you know, you can try this with them. Suggest it to the village. I think it would be a great thing. I'm not going to be here. I wish I were. But it would be a great thing to practice.